These are important audits with helpful information that in each of their own respective rights will improve government, will make the state stronger. And we look forward to working with the legislature.
Earlier today, the Legislative Audit Subcommittee met to discuss findings of three recently completed audits encompassing a wide variety of important areas for Utah, including efficiency of the Utah Transit Authority, Utah's property tax system, and an exploration into the Ogden-Hinckley Airport in northern Utah. Joining us to discuss the findings of these audits is Legislative Auditor General Cade Minchie and his team. Cade, thanks again for taking the time today.
Thanks, Edward. Glad to be here.
So, Cade, it's been a while since we've had you in here. We had a general legislative session in between over the last several months. Can you talk about how the audit team really works with the legislature and what we were able to accomplish during the 2024 session?
Thanks, Edward. It's a topic that we're really happy to talk about. And we think that Utah does an excellent job when it comes to taking an audit function and carrying it to implementation. In my opinion, Utah is the best I've seen when it comes to doing that. And let me just kind of explain the process and explain some of the impact. So every time that we present an audit, the Legislative Audit Committee, who hears the audits initially, they refer those to other committees. We call them lead and review committees. This would either be an interim committee, an appropriations committee, rarely, but sometimes maybe a standing committee. And those committees then do really hard work and a heavy lift in going through the audit very carefully. They have hearings on it. They bring in the auditee, the agency that was audited, and they work through the process with them and ensure that all the recommendations were implemented. And that's a really effective process. In the packet today that we presented to the legislature and on our website, you can find a lead and review committee report. Every audit that was assigned a lead and review committee did have a hearing, which is really encouraging. What that led to was an impact document, which we also presented to the audit committee, that has a number of bills and how that related to an audit. The audit came out and made a recommendation, something specific. The legislature then took that recommendation and put it into law. So as an example of an important issue that we worked on last year in 2023 was water-related issues. And House Bill 280 by Representative Snyder took those recommendations, put all that into a bill, and pushed that policy forward. That's just one of, you know, about a dozen and a half examples that we have in that space. So we're really encouraged by it, Edward, and we audit to help organizations improve. We don't do this to try and tear down an organization or to embarrass them. We're there to make organizations better. And I think as we talk through these three audits that we released today, you'll see that each of the findings and recommendations are there to improve the organization. Every organization can improve. And every organization can be better. And when we focus on that, we really get to the highest level of implementation and success for the state.
So let's talk about this first one on the Utah Transit Authority. And so, Jesse, this audit is almost really a follow-up of an audit that was conducted in 2014 of the Utah Transit Authority that was really in-depth and identified a number of almost systemic problems within the UTA governance and structure. Can you talk about what we learned from this report and how things have improved or changed over the last several years? And what does the path forward look like for UTA?
Certainly. So as you mentioned, our last audit was almost 10 years ago. And looking into that audit, there were a number of improvements that we'd hoped were made over this period of time. What we found is there were key leadership positions that had substantial turnover, executives, directors, people in finance positions. And so that didn't allow UTA during this period of time, up until probably about 2 years ago, for them to be stable. So their governance was not in a place where they would be able to make planning decisions for the future. And so two things happened. In 2018, the legislature instituted a board of trustees for the Utah Transit Authority. And what this did is we had a full-time three-person board that allowed them to handle these decisions where UTA interacts with municipalities, with cities, so that they can do more higher level look of UTA and help that way. 2 years ago, they hired Jay Fox, who's been a very consistent part. He's the director of UTA, and he's been a consistent part in helping them flesh out what their plans should be. So those two changes have initiated, I think, a new era in UTA where they can be more reliable. You can count on it, and it is something that they can have better designs to do in the future.
And so what are some of those specific efficiencies or improvements that they have implemented? You talk about more stable leadership at the upper echelons, but you know, how has the ridership or the experience for everyday Utahns who take UTA improved or gotten better over the last 10 years?
That's a great question. And as part of the planning process, one thing that they need to do a better job of is reaching out to cities. Because as you are aware of, there's massive growth along the Wasatch Front. And in order to handle this, UDOT has said that we won't be able to build ourselves out of it. So transit's going to be a viable option that needs to be taken care of and planned for right now. And so as a result of that, some of the three things that they need to really hone in on to be more efficient and effective and like slow down delays and give people that viable option is they need to work on performance, speed, and frequency. These are the areas that if they can put into their planning process will help them meet the needs of transit as well as make it a viable option.
Mm-hmm. And so now that they have these recommendations, what do you think the future of UTA looks like over the next 10 years, as they continue to implement and improve their systems? What can we expect and what can Utahns expect from UTA and their performance?
I think if they hold fast to their plans and their designs and their leadership is consistent, it's a bright future. We can become a leader in transit as long as they are consistent in their implementing of these goals, as long as they evaluate these goals, as they work towards improving and looking at alternating bus routes, making sure that they're on top of that. They're going to be double tracking for Front Runner, so that'll also help. And so they are taking steps in that direction. But the problem is if they don't get it right now, it'll be too costly in the future. So as long as they stay the course and continue to evaluate and refine their plans, they can become a leader in transit.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Let's move to our second audit in front of the Legislative Audit Subcommittee today. It was a performance audit on Utah's property tax system. Leo, why don't you take a minute to give us an overview of what do Utah's property tax systems currently look like? How do those systems work? Who collects these taxes? Where do they go? Just real briefly, describe for us how these systems operate.
Absolutely. Thank you. Utah's property tax system is primarily a county-based system. The county assessor goes in and assesses properties and makes sure that they have about how much your property is worth. And then they send that information to the county auditor, who sets the tax rate for that county. And then they let everyone know how much those taxes are for. The tax commission is the one who collects the taxes and then passes those out to the counties. The tax commission is responsible for making sure that the counties do this in a fair and equitable way. We did create for this audit a dashboard where citizens and legislators can look at their individual county and they can see how much of each tax is going to which entity. So your taxes will go to the county itself, cities within that county, special districts like mosquito abatement, and school districts. There's also a part of property taxes that is set at the legislative level, and that's the minimum school tax, which pays for most of education in Utah.
And so as we did this investigation and this audit into the property tax systems, what were some of the things that we learned about how Utah's property tax systems operate and where we might be able to improve some of the operations?
Absolutely. After looking at the whole system, we kind of zeroed in on the property tax division within the tax commission and the county assessors and how they're assessing the properties. So with the property tax division, they have kind of a natural tension in statute with their role. They are to assist and guide the counties in being compliant with statute, but they're also to enforce that statute and oversee the process. And so that can create a tension between the county's friend and the person who makes them do things, right? We found that the tax commission, if it's a scale, it's gone too far in the help and assist. They've been pretty passive in that oversight role. And part of the reason for that is because they really only have two tools in which to ensure that counties are following. So if a county messes up, the property tax division can send out a letter saying, you messed this up, please fix it, we'll help you if we can. That's the first step. And the second step is to take away the multi-county assessing and collecting fund, which a lot of assessor's offices are largely funded by this fund. The division and counties both see that as a real last-ditch effort. It's a very nuclear option. What we're recommending is a stair step of multi-tiered options for enforcement. So optional training, required training, similar to how after the elections audit, they did the same thing for the lieutenant governor, so that there's a more reasonable progression of things for the division to do to help counties return to compliance.
Now, one of the recommendations that is made in here is to talk about increased transparency between some of these taxing entities and the everyday Utahns. Can you describe what exactly does that look like when we say increased transparency?
Yeah, I can. The main two areas that we noticed in is just general tax information. We found that in some counties, they're great about explaining why they assessed your property like you did and offering that information to the taxpayers. In some counties, the taxpayer does not get that information at all. And so increased transparency in that area is the legislature stepping in and saying, counties, this is the amount of information the taxpayer is entitled to when making these payments. The second area is in appeals of tax rates. Currently, there's, again, varying levels of transparency on different county websites and throughout the process. And so we really recommend the legislature saying this is how much information that taxpayers should have about appeals. And we also recommend that some of those appeals officials get increased and continuing training.
Now, Jesse, going back to you for this third audit, this audit on the Ogden-Hinkley Airport. For those of our listeners who might not live in northern Utah, might not know that we have an airport that's almost directly in Ogden City and has been there for many, many years. However, there have been some concerns over the management of this airport. And so this audit really tried to do its best of trying to get to the root of some of these mismanagement problems. And so can you describe for us real briefly, what were some of the findings that this audit came to in examining the management of this airport?
Certainly. Hangar management was a big issue. One of the ways that they earn revenue on the airport is renting hangars. And people who want to store their planes there have an opportunity to own a hangar by building it. They don't own the ground that it's built on, but they can use that hangar and then they just pay a small fee each month to be able to use that and to store their airplanes. What we found is over years and years, managers over the airport hadn't really performed a lot of inspections. They have allowed some of them to go very derelict. They've allowed them to be used for uses that are not appropriate. Usually the point of the hangar is to have a functioning airplane in there. We found hangars that had airplanes, but they weren't functioning. We found hangars that had many other things, almost everything except an airplane in there. Someone turned it into a giant man cave where they put in a jacuzzi, living quarters. Other people were used it as storage facilities. And so it was being misused. They also weren't running the financial side of the airport very well. They had operated at a loss for many, many years to the tune between, you know, $200,000 to $1 million a year. They don't need to be profitable. That's not something the FAA requires. However, compared to other airports that were similar in size, they were well below the management in terms of finances. Ogden City is in charge of that. The legislature from time to time does give funding to them. They gave them $10 million and they did use most of that for what they said they would. However, just back to the mismanagement thing, they promised that they would have a couple thousand jobs there and over $200 million in increased revenue. Those things have not been realized, and we believe it's because part of their planning process didn't include evaluating and putting in a viable plan. So I would like to say, though, that they're heading in a better direction. They're looking to manage it better and try to be a little more responsible with how they handle their hangars, revenues, and those things.
Mm-hmm. So with the recommendations from this audit that are given to the municipal officials as well as the individuals in charge of the airport, what can Ogden City do in order to help turn around the Ogden-Hinkley Airport and make it a more functional airport facility?
It's a great question. I think implementing a well-thought-out strategic plan and sticking to it, evaluating their processes, ensuring that they work, and if they don't, fix them. Attracting business, which they have done. That is another revenue stream. Breeze Airways has just started there. Also fixing their infrastructure, which they are working on. Most people don't realize this, but the vast majority of revenue, for example, Salt Lake Airport, doesn't come from the airlines. It actually comes from parking. And so that's another revenue stream that they could probably tap into and look to improve.
Okay, well, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Edward. We appreciate coming and recording the podcast with you again. I think these are important audits with helpful information that in each of their own respective rights will improve government, will make the state stronger. We look forward to working with the legislature and interested stakeholders moving forward.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kate. And we appreciate you and your team and really your office and the role that you play with the legislature and helping to improve the efficiency to make sure that our state continues to function and continues to improve. And so thank you so much for that good work.
Thank you so much. Talk to you again soon.